15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
No, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Welcome to the Gifts for Glory podcast, where we celebrate and promote men and women using their gifts for God's glory. Know someone who is making an impact for God's kingdom using their gifts, talents, and passions? We'd love to meet them. Send us an email at podcast@giftsforglory.com. That's podcast@giftsglory.com. And now here is our host, Dave Ebert.
Hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome to the latest edition of the Gifts for Glory podcast. I am Dave Ebert, and we're really looking forward to sharing this interview with you. Sharon Wilharm is a great sister in the Lord, and this is actually the second time we had a conversation. Unfortunately, technology got in the way. There were some glitches, and the recording just was not up to high quality. So we said, hey, let's redo this and get this interview right, because we want to share her story and tell her story with with the respect and with the quality that her story deserves. So we think you'll really enjoy this conversation. She's a host of All God's Women podcast, and it's a podcast not just for women. I think men can learn a lot about the Bible, about these amazing female characters in the Bible that sometimes we gloss over or we don't dive deep into. Some that don't get a lot of credit because they don't have a lot of actual scripture that they're mentioned, but their stories are so vital because the Bible in of itself is a complete story and each character is vital. So the All God's Women podcast, I think, really is a very important podcast to check out and learn about some of these characters that you might not otherwise pay much attention to. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Ed podcast, talk about filmmaking, talk about stepping into callings when maybe you don't think that you're ready or you don't think that you're qualified or you don't even think that you want to do it. So we get to hear her story coming up in just a moment. But first, 2021, right around the corner, things are going to start opening back up. There's vaccines are coming out. So it's looking more and more like we're going to get back to a little bit of semblance of normalcy very soon. So as you're looking to schedule your events, whether you're looking for a public speaker, whether you're looking for a guest minister, or you'd like to do something even more outside the box and host an improv workshop to help improve your team's camaraderie, your team's communication, your ministry team's effectiveness, we would love to work with you to make your event special. So drop us a line if you're interested in having us come out and speak to your group or teach improv to your group. We could do it for any budget, for any group size. We just would love to work with you. And if you're still not quite ready to open back up full bore, we can do it virtually as well. Reach out to us at booking@giftsforglory.com. booking@giftsforglory.com for any information that you might need for your next event. We'd love to come out and be a part of it and make it a very special event. That's booking@giftsforglory.com. And now let's move on to our Devotions with Dave segment. For this week, we wanted to jump into 2 Corinthians 12. This is the passage where Paul is talking about the thorn in the flesh. Now, there are a lot of people who have theories or a lot of speculation about what the thorn in the flesh was. We really don't know. But what's most important is what Paul experienced when he prayed about this thorn in the flesh. So let's jump into 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and we'll pick up in verse 8. This is right after Paul is explaining that he's had this tormentor, this messenger from Satan to torment him and keep him from becoming proud. So verse 8, Paul says, three different times I begged the Lord to take it away, talking about this thorn in the flesh, this messenger from Satan. Three different times I begged the Lord to take it away. Each time he said, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. That's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses and in the insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles that I suffer for Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And I think that's very important here. It's such a deep lesson here that Paul learns and that he passes along to us here in 2 Corinthians 12. You know, he begged the Lord, "Lord, take this thing away from me, this tormentor, this messenger of Satan, take it away." But God's like, "My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness." So it's so important to realize and remember that when you have something you're struggling with, and I'm preaching to myself as much as anybody, that when you have a weakness, when you have something that's in your way, something that you wish God would just take out of your life so that you can move on, we have to rely on the fact and remember that God's grace is all we need. God's power works best in our weaknesses. It just goes to show that we can't do this on our own. We're not supposed to do this on our own. Because if we could, then to the average human, it would seem like, well, if we could do this on our own, then why do we need God? Why do we need a Savior? Why do we need salvation? But the thing is, we can't do it on our own. We're not supposed to. We were never meant to go through life alone. God designed us from the very beginning to be in fellowship and community with Him. That was the design in the Garden of Eden, us walking in the garden in the cool of the day, just hanging out with our Father. Then sin entered the picture. And because of sin, death. And because of death, a need for a Savior. And were it not for that sin, then Paul wouldn't have to beg three times for this tormentor to be taken from, this thorn in the flesh to be taken. And God wouldn't have had to respond, "Well, my grace is all you need." But we need the grace because there's sin. We need the grace because we are fallen and this is a broken world and we let sin into this world to corrupt it, to destroy the beauty that God originally designed. So as Paul learns, we need to remember that God's grace is all we need. His power is made perfect in our weaknesses. So if we're going to boast, let's boast in God. If we're going to boast, if we're going to brag, let's brag in Jesus Christ. So again, three times I begged the Lord to take it away. Each time He said, "My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. That's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses." Paul says he takes pleasure in his own weaknesses. And he takes pleasure in the insults, the hardships, the persecutions, and the troubles that I, Paul, suffer for Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong. We're made strong, not in our weakness, but in our willingness to surrender it all and hand over control and power to the grace that is sufficient, the grace of God that is all we need, the power of God that works best in our weakness. So let me encourage you that whenever you have something that's in your way, an obstacle, a thorn in the flesh, a tormentor from Satan, number one, appreciate the fact that you're not becoming proud. Appreciate the fact that you're not boasting in yourself. And also know that God's got you. God's grace is all you need. God's power works best in weakness. So be encouraged. Don't be discouraged. Know that no matter what, there's nothing new under the sun. Just trust in God. Rely on God. Let Him be your strength. Let Him be your hope. And let Him take the burdens of this world off of your shoulders. You don't have to be strong. You don't have to do it alone. You're not supposed to. God's grace is all you need. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 8 through 10. That was our Devotions with Dave segment. So I hope that's an encouragement to you. I hope that you are encouraged. No matter how crazy things have been in 2020, no matter how desperate things might seem, there's hope. And there's joy. And there's grace. And it's all through God. It's all through Jesus Christ. So just rely on that. Trust in that. And that's our Devotions with Dave segment for this week here on the Gifts for Glory podcast. Let's now get on to our interview with Sharon Wilharm. She's a speaker, podcast host, former filmmaker. She's from the Nashville area and host of All God's Women podcast. We're going to talk about filmmaking, the joys and challenges of being called into fields that you don't feel prepared for, taking leaps of faith and trusting God all along the way. I hope you'll enjoy this interview with Sharon Wilharm right here on the Gifts for Glory podcast, where we celebrate and promote men and women using their gifts for God's glory. So this is actually take two. You are on the Gifts for Glory podcast, and we tried this once before, but technology failed us. Could have forced the episode and cut out the garbles and the breakups in technology there in the internet connection. But Sharon's got a heart and a story that should be told in full. And I didn't want to rob her the opportunity to share and for the audience to get everything that she has to say. So we're going to say, are we going to say everything that we said last time? Probably not. But we have faith that God is going to make sure that what needs to be said is said. And we're trusting the empowerment of the Holy Spirit to make sure that this interview goes even better than the last one. Sharon Wilharm is, in her words, a former filmmaker, having made 7 films. And I say she's a former filmmaker in her words because God has a funny way of opening doors we try to shut off. But she's trusting that God is not going to put her back into filmmaking. But she does have an awesome podcast. It's called All God's Women. She's also a speaker. And we got a lot of great stuff to talk about. So without further ado, let me bring on Sharon Wilharm to the Gifts for Glory podcast. Sharon, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It is really nice to have you back. Again, I'm sorry about the first edition, but again, you know, maybe God just wanted this podcast to go out a little bit later. So he's like, oh, well, I'll send the little angels to unplug and replug and mess with the connection there. God has a purpose for everything, and even a podcast conversation could have a great purpose, so we're trusting in that. You are a former filmmaker. You've made 7 films, the last of which included one of my friends, actress Mimi Sagadin, in the movie called Summer of 67. So let's talk a little bit about filmmaking, since that's the past, and kind of bring everybody up to speed. How was that process, and what got you into filmmaking?
Well, I call myself an accidental filmmaker because unlike every other filmmaker I know, like they all as children were making home movies and doing all this kind of stuff, you know, just obsessed with filmmaking. I had no interest whatsoever. I was a bookworm and loved books, really didn't watch movies at all. And then my husband and I got married, and I knew that he had a degree in broadcast communications, but he had not ever done anything with that. He graduated in that, decided that it wasn't going to work because he's pretty much an introvert, and decided he just didn't have the personality. So he had become a businessman. So by the time I knew him, that's how that's who he was. But we'd been married for 10 years, and during that time, he had done like some video work on the side, you know, some commercials and, you know, little projects. And we moved to a small town, a little historic town that had a great history. And one day he said, you know, I think I'd like to make a documentary about this town and their history. And I said, well, that sounds great. Just have at it, you know, wonderful. And neither one of us can remember exactly what happened, but somehow or another, his little documentary turned into a faith-based film with me writing and directing and starring in it.
Wow.
And it was bad, really bad. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I had like experience in each of those things, but like I had directed theater type drama, you know, church drama, which is big. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're kind of over the top, and that's kind of what actress I was. I was used to projecting to the last row. That does not work in film. It Anyway, and so after it was over, I was like, okay, never again. You know, this was just horrible. We all agreed this was not my gifting. So we moved on with life and we moved to Tennessee, was doing things. And then Facing the Giants released with Sherwood Baptist. And as we watched that, it was like, you should make another movie. And it's like, you know, how God kind of erases from your mind all the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. So we made another movie. And again, it was bad. And the reason was because I still didn't know anything about filmmaking. We did decide that I would never again be in front of the camera. That was a unanimous decision. That was not going to happen, but I was still writing and directing. And I hated it, you know, because it was like I was doing it. I knew this was what we were supposed to be doing. I was supporting my husband, but I did not like it. Mm-hmm. And mainly because I felt like I was inadequate and I didn't know what I was doing. And then next thing I know, we're making another movie. And I was just getting angrier and angrier. I remember my parents just begging me, stop making movies. It's just, you're just going insane. You know, it's not a good thing. And I'm like, but we're supposed to be doing this. I know it. And so one day I was just kind of yelling at God. And I'm like, God, I'm so tired of this. You know, why do you keep making me do something that I'm not good at? And very plainly, God said, then get good at it. Mm. And so from that point on, I was like, okay, so this is what I've got to do. I need to be giving it my best. And so from that point on, I started, you know, taking classes, reading books, watching movies so that I knew how they were made. And everything changed. I still, you know, never had that, oh, I just love being a filmmaker. But I came to that point of this is what God has called me to do, and I'm going to give it my best.
By the fourth film, you're at least have trained and you're getting good at the practice. Did you, when you get to that fourth film and then the fifth, sixth, and seventh, did you feel more confident in that because you had a little bit more experience in training, or was it still kind of like a labor of, okay, this is just my mission field, God, I'm going to bear my cross and do it? Or was it more enjoyable the last half?
You know, it's funny because each time I would start to write the script, I would feel like I was starting over. It was like I forgot, and it was like I would just get all panicky and everything. But now our fifth and sixth movies were actually silent films. And so they were a little bit different. And it was funny because in between, we were getting ready to work on our fifth film. And my husband and I were sitting in this Mexican restaurant, just talking about the movie and everything. We knew kind of the idea. The idea was that it was going to be this Bible that was going to be passed to all these different strangers. And some people would accept it, some people would reject it. But, you know, that was the general story. And as we were talking about it, we were talking about the dialogue. Because I had discovered I am very gifted in writing cheesy dialogue. Like, okay. I can do it without even, like, trying. But we felt that that was probably not a good thing. And that maybe I shouldn't be writing cheesy dialogue. And so we were trying to figure out, you know, how to avoid that. Mm-hmm. And so as we were talking about it, you know, we were talking about how one thing you always hear is to show, not tell. You know, that's like the first rule of filmmaking. And so my husband, he's like, what if we literally showed, not told? And I'm like, what do you mean? And we had done, you know, we're in Nashville. So we have done a lot of music videos, mm-hmm. and like silent type commercials that were like music videos. And I'd done a lot of that with church drama. And he's like, what if we made a silent movie? And it was like, could that be done? You know, and it was kind of around the same time that The Artist had come out, but The Artist did it like a old fashioned, you know, with the captions and all that. But our idea was to take a music video concept and have this whole story told visually and, you know, see if it could be done. And so one day I just sat at home and I started writing the story just as if I was going to do like a music video, and it came too. And I was like, we can do this. And so we did. And then it was funny because then after we released it and we would contact, you know, all of our connections in the industry, the distributors, and they would all like look at it and go, we have no idea what to do with this. What are we supposed to do with this? And so we started entering it in film festivals, and it actually did really well in film festivals. And after that, then we got interest, and, you know, I guess the distributors said, you know, if it can do well in film festivals. And so then I discovered I really liked doing silent films, and nice. I think that I'm actually better at that. And then the next one we did was a love story. And so it spans 40 years, and it's a concept that we had for years and years and couldn't figure out how to make it happen, because you would have to have a child, a teen, an adult for each of the main characters. And, and that's kind of hard to do. As a silent, it actually worked, you know, a lot better. And that was the one that ended up getting into AMC Independent and showing in New York City at the Empire, and has literally kind of shown around the world. And I love doing the silent films. I felt a lot more confident. I don't know. I just felt like that was my strength. But we decided we needed to do one more. Like, we had decided that was it. But then it was like, no, God's calling us to do one more. And after doing two silent films that are really niche, you know, very limited, we're like, no, we're going to do one more mass market type. And so we decided we wanted to do period, because we live in an old house. We, you know, love all things old. Decided that 60s would be a really easy, you know, time for us to do. And so I pulled from my background. My dad was on the USS Forrestal when it caught fire when I was a baby. And I'd always heard that story. And it's like, you know what? Why don't we pull out this obscure piece of history and kind of put the story around it.
Wow.
And so that's what we did. And it was without a doubt the hardest movie that we did. mainly because we were just really pushing the limits of doing a period movie to that extent, you know, because it was a pretty big story and trying to do it on a minuscule budget. Mm. But God used it.
Absolutely. Now, you brought up the fact you live in an old home, so I'm looking behind you, and I don't know, is that a screen that's through Zoom, or is that your actual
room?
That's
our house. I'm in our foyer.
So that is just a phenomenal-looking room, and the people that are listening are like, what are you guys talking about? But, I mean, it looks almost like, if I was going to say, like, I'm thinking movies, it kind of looks like a room that belongs in the movie Clue. Yes. I don't know if you saw that old one, but
well, see, that's another thing. When we moved into this house, we were done with movies. You know, we weren't going to do anymore. But after living in this house for a little bit, we're like, you know what? This is a movie set. This house deserves to be a movies. And so we have filmed 4 movies in this house. And it's really wild because it's always the main set. It's where the main character lives. In some movies, we've had multiple characters living in the house. So what we'll do is, like, the living room and the dining room is Millie's house, and the family room is Joanna's house, and this room is, you know, Gerald's house. And it just really lends itself. And then when we have actors coming, we have them staying in the house, all the out of town. And so that's always kind of fun, because you're filming, and then when you have to film in that room where they're staying, you're taking all the suitcases and all their stuff and pushing it in the other room. But the actors love being in the house. It's just a really cool house, and we are blessed.
And just seeing your foyer is like, that's an awesome house. It's almost like you know, the type of Field of Dreams type thing, where you just charge $20 for people to just walk through the house. Like, yeah, this is our house. Come take a look.
We get a lot of requests. They do a lot of music videos here in town because we're north of Nashville, and they do a lot. And we get a lot of requests, but we don't do music videos in our house because we are familiar with film people. And so we know how they invade your house, but yeah.
I want to talk about All God's Women, which is your podcast, and we'll really dive into that here in a little bit. But I wanted to introduce our audience to who you are and your journey, because you grew up in a Christian home, and you got saved and accepted Christ at a very young age. But I want to hear, and I want our audience to hear your testimony about how did you meet Jesus, and how did that all happened where you accepted him at such a young age. So if you would just share your testimony as much with as much detail as you want.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a Christian home. Both my parents were very active in church. And so, you know, pretty much when the doors were open, we were there. And, you know, I was always, you know, the good girl. I liked church and everything, but it was funny. One Sunday we had had the Lord's Supper. And obviously we had done this a lot of times, but for some reason, this particular time, I really became aware of it. And it was because everybody else was doing something that I wasn't doing. Like, I wasn't a part of it. And I didn't understand what they were doing. It's like, what is this? You know, and why can't I do it? And so a few days later, my mom and I were in the car driving home. And in our neighborhood, and I started asking her questions like, you know, what does this mean and why are we doing this? And she just started answering my questions and began to basically share the plan of salvation with me as we drove along in the car. And then she explained what it meant to be a Christian. And she's like, you know, all you have to do is pray. Would you like to do that? And I was like, well, yeah. And so we were at a four-way stop and she just pulled over on the side of the road and the two of us just prayed right then and there. And that was it.
And how amazing for your mom to be able to be the one to lead you to the Lord. Because I know that many parents want that gift, but usually it's a youth pastor, or it's a pastor at church. And it's like, you know, the parents put all the work in and then they're like, oh, I didn't get to do it. So that was really awesome for your mom. And I remember in our last conversation, remembering that you accepted Christ at a four-way stop, which is in the shape of a cross. So literally you accepted Christ at the cross.
Yes. And, you know, I think it's so cool because I think a lot of times when kids start asking questions, the parents will just refer them to somebody else, mm-hmm. you know, say, oh, well, you need to talk to the preacher about that. But she didn't, you know, she was just answering my questions and just, you know, was right there. And I'm very thankful for that, you know.
So at you were, I think, 7 years old at the time. Yes. And so after you accepted Christ at seven, I'm sure that life was absolutely easy peasy because, you know, you're now a Christian, right?
You know, it's funny because I did. I've been very blessed. I've had a very, I guess, non-eventful life, you know, like I wasn't a rebel. And I have always loved God and everything. Now, that doesn't mean life has been perfect, you know, in any way. I've certainly not been perfect, but I'm very grateful that he's always been a part of my life. There wasn't a time when I just kind of rebelled from it. I know a lot of people, when they make a decision young, then they reach teenage. But now it was pretty much established. And I think a lot of it was because, you know, in my life, I didn't know any different. That's what I was grown up, you know, with. I didn't have any desire for anything different.
So at a young age, you know Jesus. And then it wasn't long after that that you started feeling like you're supposed to be in front of people sharing faith in one way or another. So tell us a little bit about where you felt God was leading you shortly after you became a follower of Christ.
Well, I was always involved in church, and I was very blessed being in a small church where they let, like, teenagers actually do things. I'm very thankful for that. So, you know, like, I think when I was in seventh grade, I started working in VBS. When I was ninth grade, I decided that we needed a Mission Friends at our church, and so I can't believe they let me, but I started Mission Friends at our church. Wow. And I had a guy that was friends with me at church and the two of us did it. And I'm like, that is so weird. Two ninth graders teaching a bunch of, you know, preschoolers, but I don't know. We did it. And ACT Teens, which was for teenage girls at our church, was a big part of my life. And my mother was our ACT Teens leader. And there was, when I was in ninth grade, I was chosen to preside at our state meeting. And all that meant was I got to introduce the speakers. And I had been going to these meetings, you know, for several years. I was familiar with them. I really looked up to them, especially there was one lady, we called her the Cookie Crumble Lady, because she told these stories about cookies. And so I was so excited to get to preside, and they had the little green room, which was basically a closet behind the stage. And I remember sitting in there just so excited to get to talk to these women beforehand. And then we went out onto the stage, and I mean, the stage was like 6 inches off the ground, you know, maybe 6 by 6. It was a really tiny stage. But as I went to that stage and I stood at that podium and I went to go introduce the women that were speaking, suddenly I had this feeling of, this is where I'm supposed to be. I am at my place. And a younger girl took my picture like I was some kind of celebrity. And I was just like, I am at my place. And I found out afterwards that my mom was sitting with her best friend, who was also an ACT Teens leader. And Miss Rachel looked over to my mom and she said, she's beautiful. And then my mom told me that. And that was the first time like anybody had called me beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I felt it was because I was right where I was supposed to be. And so I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to do with my life. But nobody cares what a ninth grader has to say. Right. Like, nobody. And so then I just kind of had this in my mind. And I was like, I'm going to, you know, just go on and God will open up the doors. And it wasn't. I majored in elementary ed in college because I'm like, what else are you supposed to major in if you think you're going to, you know, be a speaker? But again, even as a college student, I knew nobody had any interest in what I had to say. I had to have something. And when I was in my senior year of college, I went to a Baptist Campus Ministries event. It was, again, a statewide event. And there was a guy the last night that gave an evangelistic call for people to go into full-time service. And as I was sitting there in that audience, I felt God calling me very clearly. But the thing is I was like, oh, this is great. God, you're calling me into ministry. Oh, I love this. Yes. You know, this is what I'm meant to do. And so I was like, okay, God, what is it you want me to do? And very clearly I heard God saying, I can't tell you because what I'm calling you to do, you don't even know exist. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? You know, what does that even mean? And so I didn't go forward when my other friends, you know, were going forward saying, hey, I feel God calling me to be a youth pastor or children's church or, you know, a missionary. And I said nothing because what was I going to say? I feel God calling me, but it's a secret what I'm going to do. And so I was just like, okay, God, what do you want me to do? And then a few months after that, my best friend and I were driving home from a church service and it was dark and she was driving and we were along this country road. And suddenly I just had this vision and I don't normally have visions, but suddenly I could just see myself and I was on this big, in this big auditorium and it was packed and the excitement level was so high. You could just feel it in the air. And I was standing up on the stage and I was talking to these people, but the problem was that the lights were so that they were all on me and the audience was in the dark, so I couldn't see who I was speaking to and I couldn't hear what I was saying. And I was like, God, you want me to speak to people? Who am I talking to and what am I telling them? And he said nothing. And so, you know, I spent years trying to figure out, I know God wants me to speak. I know, but he just, you know, I'd have something here or there, but it was like, no, the time's not right. No, the time's not right. And then many years later, we were on our fourth movie, and we were at the premiere of it. And it was a church, and it was just so exciting. The church was packed and I'm standing up on stage and I'm introducing the movie and I'm looking out at the audience, but the lights are on me and they're in the dark and I can't see them. And then it hits me. This was what God was preparing me for. This was what he was talking about. And he was right. Cause if he had told me when I was in college that I was going to make movies, I would have just like, I don't know what I would have done. And the funny thing is I was introducing a silent movie. So it's like, okay, the girl who wanted to speak is speaking through a silent movie.
Right. And in some ways that was also a prophetic vision of being a podcaster. Because all the lights are on you, the audience is in the dark. There's no direct feedback. You've made the movies and you've been up for awards. I believe you even won a few. Is that right?
We've won several dozen festival awards.
Because at one point you were actually nominated with some big name movies, right?
Yes, we won 4 Crown Awards, and the Crown Awards is put out by the International Christian Visual Medias Media Association, and it is like an industry awards for the Christian movie industry. And like each, we would, you know, submit our films and, you know, they were just like, we wouldn't get anything. We wouldn't get nominated. It was just, you know, and we expected that. But then when we did Providence, we submitted it. And, you know, a short while later, we got a notice that we were nominated for 4 awards. Wow. And we're like, oh, well, that's wild. And we're like, well, those were the only 4 awards we were eligible for. So maybe if you're eligible for, you're just automatically nominated. Maybe that's how it works. Well, then we started seeing, you know, the list of everything. And it's like, no, no, everybody else isn't nominated for 4 awards. Right. Well, that's really odd. And so then we're looking at the list, and there's like 45 films. And one of them was War Room. Wow. And one of them was Beyond the Mask, which was another big one. And then there's all these, you know, films. And so we're just like, well, this is really cool that we are nominated, you know, for films along with all these. And so we go to the award ceremony, and we don't know anybody except for one couple. And they were just so kind. And he's like, oh, I just know y'all are going to win. And we're like, please. You know? Like, we're just excited to be here. And, you know, we were honestly like, we didn't care about winning because we were just so honored to be included amongst these amazing movies. And so the first award that we're eligible for, they would do a first, second, and third. And we were, I think, third for that one. And we're like, oh, well, that is pretty cool. And nice. So we get our little certificate, and we're just like sitting there beaming going, well, this is exciting. And, you know, we're just kind of caught up in that. And then next thing you know, they're doing the second award that we're eligible for. And we got like second for that. And we're like, okay, this is bizarre. And then next thing you know, we got, I think, third for that one, or no, we won that one. And it was for the low budget film. And we're like, okay, you know, this is pretty exciting. And so, you know, we're like, this has been a great night. And then they're coming up for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're up against War Room and Beyond the Mask and this other movie that was a foreign film that was, you know, so we're really not paying any attention. And our friend over there is going, I think we're going to win. And we're like, I don't think so. You know? Lo and behold, we got third place out of those 45 films. And the funny thing was afterwards, all these people were coming up to us and literally they were going, who are you? Like, why are you here? And we just felt like the trailer park relatives, you know, at this country club. And it was just the most bizarre thing. And I think the only reason was because, like, when we were getting ready for it, I would pray about it. And I wasn't praying to win because I really didn't care, because that was going to be our last movie. And we had won plenty of awards. And I'm like, you know, God, we've already been blessed. We're winding down our, you know, film career. Just bless whoever needs it, you know, mm-hmm. Just let whoever needs it. And so then when we're driving home with these 4 awards going, what does this mean? You know, like, God, what are you trying to tell us? And that's when we're like, you know what? The only reason he would have this happen is because he wanted us to do another movie, you know, to say I'm as encouragement. And so that's what we did.
We've got the second half of this awesome conversation coming up next. But first, are you looking for a speaker for your next event? A guest pastor to fill in and give your staff a break? A moving testimony to share the hope found in Christ alone? For this and more, our host Dave Ebert is now taking bookings to share his testimony, his love of laughter, and the joy of the Lord with your audience. For information, contact booking at giftsforglory.com. Booking at gifts4glory.com. Booking at giftsforglory.com. We'll be back with more of this amazing conversation next on the Gifts for Glory podcast, where we celebrate and promote men and women using their gifts for God's glory.
Xfinity is breaking the gig barrier with Wi-Fi speeds over a gig. It's more than enough speed to power all your devices. Introducing Gig Wi-Fi, new from Xfinity. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY or visit a store today. Restrictions apply.
Like, God, what are you trying to tell us? And that's when we're like, you know what? The only reason he would have this happen is because he wanted us to do another movie, you know, to say I'm as encouragement. And so that's what we did.
So that was for Providence.
Yes.
And that was your 6th film.
Yes, right? It was.
Was that also a silent film, right?
It was a silent film. And I think that was partly it because it was so different. Mm-hmm. But it was really cool because we won second place for most evangelistic, which is, you know, really neat to be able to tell the gospel without words.
I guess it should also have won a St. Francis of Assisi Award for, you know, witness, and then if necessary, use words.
Yes. We said that a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So you win those awards, and then the next movie is Summer of 67. Is that correct? And that's starring our friend Mimi Sagadin, who's a phenomenal actress. Super fun improviser because she did a guest spot on one of our improv shows. So tell us a little bit about Summer of 67, and then after that, tell us a little bit about where we can see all seven of your films, or at least the ones that you're proud of.
Well, Summer of 67 is a Vietnam War love story, and it's told from the perspective of the women left behind. So it is a Vietnam War movie that doesn't have scenes in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. But the focus and the reason was because when I was growing up and I would hear my parents talk about, you know, the Vietnam War and, you know, what they went through. And I guess the first thing that really I remember that really struck my attention was when the soldiers were coming back from either Afghanistan or Iran. I don't remember, you know, which one it was, but I remember they were getting a big, like, hero's welcome, you know, when they were coming back. And it was the weirdest thing because my mother got very angry. And she was like, it just wasn't fair. It just wasn't fair. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, when your dad came, it wasn't anything like that. They were treated like, you know. Mm-hmm. And so then she started telling me about how they treated the Vietnam War soldiers. And that just broke my heart, you know. And so I wanted to kind of capture that because I don't think, you know, especially the younger generation has a clue about that. And so the more I started looking into the Vietnam War, it was fascinating, you know, interviewing all these different people and getting their perspective of it. And, you know, so many people were caught up in it and it wasn't their choice by any means, you know. And so listening to these men talk about how when they were in college and they would sit in the dorm and they would call, they had the lottery. And so on TV, they would announce which numbers were getting called. And he said how he would hear, like, you know, some guy in his room just crying because his number was called and he didn't want to have to go. And so it was, it's really the most emotional of our movies. It's the most personal, just trying to show all that. And I really wanted to show, though, that, you know, the 60s was a difficult time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, when I wrote this in, like, I don't know, 2016 or 17, I think it was, I felt like we were going through a difficult time then. Yeah. I had no idea. But the idea was that God was there in the 60s and he was always there, you know, throughout, even when they couldn't see him necessarily, he was there watching out for him, and that he will be there whatever we go through. And so in a way, the message that, you know, I was telling then is way more relevant now because of what we're going through. But it was a fun movie to make as far as we spent a year shopping for all the 60s things. While we were touring with Providence, we would go to film festivals and movie screenings all over the country, and we would stop at thrift stores and antique stores along the way and basically looking for the tackiest things we could find, you know, what was the gaudiest. And, you know, I remember buying this house coat that Mimi wears. And I mean, it is hideous, this yellow flowered thing. I mean, the ugliest thing. And when we're buying it, the cashier is kind of holding it up and looking at it like, and you can see she's going, why would anybody purchase this thing? Right. And so, you know, everybody would tell them it's movie props. And then we could tell them about the movie. I made a lot of the clothes. I would go to stores and get the, or like estate sales and stuff, and find the vintage clothes, fabric and patterns, and then make the dresses. And then we transformed our home into a 60s house. Wow. And so that was a lot of fun, taking our beautiful furniture, moving it out of the way, and putting literally the main couch that we used, we found on the side of the road. And it was funny because we were driving on this little, I mean, in a bad area of town. And we see this chair, this hideous yellow chair on the side of the road. And we're like, oh, that'd be perfect for the movie. And so we look around, see if anybody sees, you know, I mean, it's there for the dump, but you know, we're like, this is kind of embarrassing. So we get it. And we're like, oh, this is great. If only we had the couch to match. Well, a few days later, we're driving down that same road, and there is the matching couch. Wow. But it's been rained on at least once. Oh, no. So we're like, okay, it's pretty nasty, but we put it in our vehicle. We got to air it out, use all this stuff. It was perfect.
Nice. God provides in the most unusual ways. So where can we find your movies? Are they on any of the streaming services, or how do we find like Summer 67, Providence, and everything else?
Well, Summer 67 and The Good Book, which is number 5, those are both pretty much available wherever you can stream movies.
Okay.
You know, whether it's Amazon Prime, Tubi TV, Google Play, all those different, you know, okay, traditional sources. And Providence is available at Christian Cinema.
Okay.
And a few other Christian places. If you go to my website at SharonWilharm.com/films, you can look up each of the movies, and then it tells you where that movie is available.
Awesome. We will definitely link to that page on the in the show notes so people can find those films. Now let's get on to what's going on currently. You're doing a podcast called All God's Women, which is a journey through the Bible looking at all the amazing women that are in the Bible that some we know, some tend to get glossed over. So I am summarizing it as best as I can, but why don't you tell us about the podcast and what listeners might get out of it?
Well, you did a good job of summarizing. That's what it is. It's a journey through the Bible, one woman at a time. And I started it in the midst of the pandemic when we were locked down. I'm not techie, like in any way. And so I really didn't even know what a podcast was, which is kind of funny because we would promote the movies and I would do a lot of podcast interviews and I didn't know how to listen to them. Like they would contact me and I would do the interview and then I'm like, I have no clue how to even listen to this.
Right.
And but I started seeing more and more people doing podcasts. I started looking into it. And then I was like, you know, this might be something fun to do. My daughter and her husband and their new baby were going to be moving to Kentucky. He got a job as pastor. And so I knew that was coming. And I was like, you know, as soon as they move, then I think this will be something fun for me to do. And then we went into lockdown. And I was just like, this may be a strange time, but I think I just wanted something to do.
Right.
And I had been doing for the past year a women's monthly luncheon where each month we would focus on a different woman. And I've always loved women of the Bible. So it seemed like, you know, something like I can talk about this. And I had done so many interviews and it's like, I thought that that's all podcasts were. And I was very excited when I found out that you could do a solo podcast.
Right.
Because, and I had been interviewing on my blog since 2013, I had been doing blog interviews and I was just kind of burned out, you know, on interviews. I wanted to tell stories. And so when I found out I could do that through podcasting, it's like, oh, this is cool. And I do, I love it. And like you know, how you were talking about just talking to the dark, I love just speaking into my microphone and sharing my stories. And the most amazing thing has been to see where those stories go. Mm-hmm. I was looking at my stats this week. And I'm kind of obsessed with the stats. I'm like always looking at them. I think it's so cool because we didn't get that with film. Mm-hmm. You know, with film, you don't know as much. But with a podcast, I can look and I can see how many people are listening that day and where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking at my top cities and I noticed that 3 out of my 4 top cities are in foreign countries. And my number one top city is in India. And it's a capital city in India. And I was like, well, that's really interesting. So I started looking into this town because like, why are more people in India listening to my, you know, podcast than people in my hometown? And so I started looking into this this city and 1% of their population is Christian. And I'm like, how on earth are they finding out about my podcast? And isn't that cool that they're listening to it?
Yeah.
And then I have another city in India that's there. And then also a city in Kenya that is, you know, my major cities. And I'm just like, how cool is that, that God can have me in my house with my microphone and get it to these countries. And one of the cities, the Christian population is 0.13%.
Wow.
And I'm like, what a small percentage. And yet somehow or another, some women there found my podcast.
And with that low population percentage, they're probably not able to meet a lot of fellow Christians. Or therefore, they're starving for the opportunity to be fed, to learn, to have Bible studies together. So, and that's the beauty of the internet and podcasting, is that you can reach untold numbers of people with whatever message God is putting on your heart. And each podcast episode could be for one specific person in one town who has no friends to really talk about Christ with.
See, I love that. And now one thing that I think is so cool is every single week I have a listener in this one town that's, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a town in France. And it's just one person, but every week, as soon as it comes out, that person nice. Listens. And I'm just like, that is the coolest thing, you know? And so I've started looking at these stats and thinking of them as, you know, these women and trying to picture them. And I feel like it's changing the way I'm podcasting because, you know, like, what can I say to these women that's gonna really impact them? What are they searching for? And so really trying to take these women from the Bible and really trying to draw it and give women takeaways that they can get from it.
So, and what's interesting is there are the major characters that we know about in the Bible, as far as especially female, and it feels like there's a limited number. So what's going to happen when you feel like you've gone Genesis to Revelation and you're kind of out?
Well, it's funny because, you know, when I first started it, I didn't think of that. It mm-hmm. didn't really occur to me. And then about a month or two in, somebody asked me that question. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. And I'm like, I guess I'm going to have to buy some time. So I started really investigating the obscure women. Mm-hmm. And so trying to find as many women. And it's been so cool because once I started doing that, it really changed things. Because my most popular episode is on Mephibosheth's nurse. She's a woman that gets one verse in the Bible. But what's so cool is she's the nurse that dropped the baby.
Oh, no.
She was fleeing for safety and she dropped the baby. But what I was able to talk about that baby and his life and how even though, you know, she dropped him, he still lived. He was just, you know, crippled. But so often we're doing the right thing, but we fall and we feel like a failure. But God still used that nurse because he went on to have, you know, great things. So she saved him. And so I have loved these obscure women. And so trying to find, you know, all these different women. And I think that I can make it at least a year and a half before I run out, maybe longer. And then I think what I'll do is I'll come back and I'll do some of them. And then I'll also start grouping them. Mm-hmm. So we'll focus, you know, do a series on the mothers and just focusing on aspects of that or love stories or going from there.
So far, what's been your favorite woman that maybe has surprised you?
It's funny because like some of the women that like I was hesitant to do some of the like kind of negative women or the ones that I thought were depressing. At first, I didn't want to do them, but I guess the most surprising was Rizpah, who I really hadn't heard of before. Mm-hmm. And she's just this woman who her sons... she was a concubine of Saul, and at some point, their enemy, after Saul was dead, and he was like, as revenge, he wanted five of Saul's sons and grandsons killed, and two of her sons were included in that. And basically, they're just stuck on this, you know, cross. They were crucified, and then just abandoned. And this woman for, I think it was either 4 or 5 months, just sat there guarding those bodies, keeping the animals, you know, the birds and the wild animals, and just laying guard over him until finally King David found out about it and gave him a proper burial. Well, that's kind of a weird story.
Yeah.
You know? But the more I studied it, the more I'm like, what a beautiful picture of a mother's love of what she will do, you know, for her children, even in death. I mean, she could protect them and, you know, they still died, but she was still there so loyal and, you know, through the changing season and all this. And I just breaks my heart to think of, didn't those other people see this woman? Didn't anybody care? You know, why did they just, and so it's a very sad story, but it's a very, you know, beautiful story.
Yeah. And that's just typical of the Bible, is that there's so many different layers and so many different takeaways from stories that sometimes if you gloss over, you miss the depth, because you might gloss over that story thinking that's just tragic. I don't know why it's included, but like you said, it's got that layer of a mother's love and also speaks to the people that were not the good Samaritans, willing to help somebody who's suffering because, oh, said bodies are unclean, we can't help. I really think that all the stories of the Bible, if you really dig, you can find more depth than you'd expect.
Well, that's what my thought has been. Every single thing that's in the Bible is there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, why did God include this woman? Why her story? What is it about this story, about this woman, that we're supposed to get? You know, what was he trying to tell us through it? Mm-hmm. And so by doing that, even if I just have a verse, you know, it's like God put it here for a reason, and I'm going to try to dig it out, and then I'm going to try to bring it to life so that we can continue to learn from her.
So do you take the scripture and then you do additional research with history, or do you rely specifically on the Bible and then look for context surrounding those verses?
I've actually got maybe 30 different books that are all, you know, women of the Bible type books, whether it's a few or a lot. I've got two that cover every woman in the Bible.
Okay.
And so I use one of those so that I can find them, you know, because it's kind of hard just to start at Genesis and work your way and find every woman. So I use those as the basis. I read, you know, get a general overview, and then I really pour into it with the Bible. And I try, like, I read everything I can about her. But then when I'm actually writing my script, because my podcast is very much scripted, I'm only using the Bible. And I'm going verse by verse telling that story and looking at it. And it's funny because a couple of times, like, I've started to work on a woman and I don't know. And a lot of times the bigger ones are the harder ones for me, because it's like there's so many directions you can go. There's so many different things about this woman. And so I've learned that each time I have to have a focus, like, what is the one life lesson that we can learn from this woman, and try to keep it focused on that. But it's funny because sometimes I'll start to work on a woman and I'm just like, I got nothing, you know, like I'm going through and I'm just like, it's not working, or I'll start to write and it's not, and I'll sleep on it. I'll pray about it. And then God will reveal, you're going in the wrong direction. Here's what I'm trying to say in this. And then it just comes into place.
And that is the All God's Women podcast. We'll link to it in the show notes. Check it out. And who is somebody that's coming up that you think listeners are really going to look forward to hearing about? Or how far ahead do you work?
I've got a series of widows. So I've got, I'm right now in for the kings, and so I've got several widows coming up. But it's kind of interesting because a lot of these widows, we get kind of blurry, you know, like, which widow was this? You know, dealing with Elijah and Elisha. And so it's kind of interesting because, just like, tomorrow's episode is on the widow of Zarephath. And what I didn't realize, she's the one that Elijah, she was picking up sticks for her last meal when she met Elijah. And then he ended up, you know, saying, your meal and your oil are going to last until, you know, it rains. But what was cool is I didn't realize, I just assumed she was a Hebrew woman, but she was not. She was actually in Jezebel's hometown. And so it's so neat that Elijah is running away from Jezebel, and God tells him to go to this town because this widow is going to be there for him. And so, of course, she's not looking for him in her hometown. And it's kind of interesting of how did this widow even know about the Hebrew God? Because it's obvious that she already knows him, you know, when Elijah comes. And so I just think that's, I just love when God does that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's very good at making everything kind of work together and catch us by surprise. And I always look at the Bible very similar to, I served with a Samaritan's Purse after a tornado working on some farmland. And in those farmlands, you know, there was all the debris from the, you know, from the tornado. And you had to get it cleaned because you can't have debris in farmland because it messes up the tractor. And every time you pass over a piece of the grass, you think you got all the shingles, but you come at it from a different angle with different lighting. You're like, oh, there's more here for me to pull out. And that's how the Bible works, is every time you pass over, you're coming at it from a different lens because your life is different now than it was even a week ago. So you're coming at it from a different angle and you're going to pull more stuff out. So that's why podcasts like yours, All God's Women, is going to really speak to not only women, but I think men can also get a lot out by understanding that, hey, women are just as important as men in God's story, and we should never exalt ourselves above women or think that men are the most important, because women are just as important in God's story.
It has surprised me how many men have told me that, you know, that they listen to it. And, you know, I don't make it, you know, they're not my target demographic, you know, but it has been interesting. And then like my son-in-law, who's a pastor, he was doing a sermon. And so he was like looking for one of my, I think it was Rahab, because he was going to use, you know, he's like, I'm doing my research. I'm looking for your Rahab episode.
Nice. And just everyone listening, be sure to check out All God's Women. It's really informative, really a great deep dive into these characters that often get glossed over because sometimes we think that they're not the main characters, but all of God's characters, all God's stories, they build on each other, and it's incomplete without even just one of them. So be sure to check out All God's Women, and also look up Providence and Summer 67 and the other movies. The links to Sharon's page with all the movies listed will be in the show notes, SharonWilharm.com. Now, Sharon, as you may remember from our first take, you know, using movie terms now, we end with something called the interrogation. I just throw seven quick questions at you. These are going to be different than before because I want to don't want you to be prepared. I want to catch you off guard. But just seven quick questions to kind of cover things that we wouldn't have covered otherwise. So if you're ready, we'll do the interrogation.
Let's go.
All right. So this year has been very weird. But what has been the best thing about 2020 so far?
I started a discipleship group with my women at church. I just put, who wants to dig deeper? I had four other women that said they did. We met on the Wednesday night in March. The Saturday was when we locked down. And so we had to go to Zoom, but then as soon as we could meet in person, we did. And it has been the most amazing thing. The five of us, the youngest is the age of my daughter. I'm the oldest. And then we've got in between, and we have grown and just dug into the Bible, just really gotten to know each other in a really in-depth way. And it has been a great time of just spiritual encouragement for each of us.
Very nice. Question number two, what's the last thing that made you laugh?
Oh my. Well, my husband has been out of town for 2 days, so I've been home by myself. So I haven't done a lot of laughing. I haven't done a lot of talking. I'm sure it would be something talking to my daughter on the phone. I'm sure she has made me laugh.
Okay. All right. Of the seven films you've made, what was your favorite location that you did in on location film?
I like shooting at our house. It's very easy. But probably the most fun, we shot in Summer of 67, we shot scenes at a train museum. And it was really cool having the beautiful old trains and just a great set. And so I guess that would be the most exciting.
All right. Looking back, what's been the biggest regret in your life?
I try not to have regrets. I think if I had to do things over again, I would probably have parented a little different, as far as sometimes I tended to be a helicopter mom. And so I regret not giving my daughter full, you know, more room, I guess, as a teenager, but she has thrived in spite of me. And we have a very close relationship. But yes, you know, I think with parenting, you're always going to wish you did things differently.
Sure, absolutely. Who are your biggest influences?
I guess a lot of writers. My favorite writer is Isabella Alden. She was a turn of the century author who wrote Christian fiction, and she really inspires me because she wrote Christian fiction that really showed Christianity. As she was a pastor's wife, and so she kind of got deep into the church and showed where we fail a lot of times, not in the big failings, but just in those little things that we do that, you know, aren't godly. And so she really brought those to light and challenges me.
Okay. What is the last scripture that either changed or challenged you?
We had planned for this past month a conference on focus. And so for the life of me right now, it's in Jeremiah. I can't tell you where it was found, but it was on keeping our focus on the Lord and not on the things of this world. And I think it's become very, you know, relevant. It's so easy to look around us at everything, and we just have to keep our focus on God, despite everything that's going on in our world.
Absolutely. All right, final question is, I know that you're done, but when you look back at filmmaking, what do you miss most?
I miss the people. I love the actors and the crew that we got to meet, spending that time, that closeness. I enjoyed very much that aspect of filmmaking, just the friendships. And a lot of them, they have endured, you know, but I miss that connection.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, the final question we always ask at the end of our interviews is, for somebody that's listening that's trying to find their path and trying to figure a way to use their gifts, their talents, their passions in service to God, what would your wise counsel be to them, whether they're looking to be a podcaster, a filmmaker, or just in general? What would your wise counsel be?
To make sure that this is what God is leading you to do and to not just kind of go full force. A lot of times we do things that seem good in our eyes. And, you know, we're rushing it. God is saying the time's not right. You know, yes, you're going to do this, but not now. You know, we're just so eager to do things, and we just need to make sure that this is God leading us and not us trying to lead God.
Perfect. Well said. Well, Sharon, we made it through, and I believe that this one is a keeper, so I don't think we'll need a take three. But Sharon Wilharm, thank you so much for coming on the Gifts for Glory podcast. All God's Women, I hope everyone will check it out and listen to those amazing episodes. And we wish you all the best in Tennessee, and hopefully all this COVID stuff will go away, and 2021 will be an even better year.
Well, thank you for having me.
Are you looking for a speaker for your next event? A guest pastor to fill in and give your staff a break? A moving testimony to share the hope found in Christ alone? For this and more, our host Dave Ebert is now taking bookings to share his testimony, his love of laughter, and the joy of the Lord with your audience. For information, contact booking at giftsforglory.com. Booking@gifts4glory.com. Booking@gifts4glory.com.